Rock under fire to Memphis, Egypt. Rock under fire to Memphis, Egypt. Come in, Memphis, Egypt. But for anybody listening out there, obviously Mike and Pat here, we're joined by Aaron Novak, a comrade, a kindred spirit. Aaron is one of the hosts of Memphis, Egypt with Aaron and Todd, a weekly indie / new music radio show on WDCE 90.1 FM in Richmond, Virginia on Tuesday nights.
Right. Yep. Tuesdays 9 to 11. Yep. Right on.
I had two things I wanted to open with, but Pat went there already. But you know, it's already connected. Ben, no, it's all good because it's kind of maybe I'll just put the whole damn call into the show. But we didn't say anything too incriminating, I don't think. So it's not to be edited. But but you know, I'm going to connect it back to you and me and Pat, and you know how we all got into this mess in the first place. You played it was either your last show or one of your last shows. You played "Don't Tell Me No" by the Cars, and
that's right, yeah.
And I played "Don't Tell Me No" during our the second Christmas episode, the episode that we actually got right and left off of YouTube.
Oh, that's a funny coincidence.
So yeah, as Pat mentioned, and anybody who might remember, Aaron Novak is the guy who bailed us out after the release of our first Christmas show, the year that it got pulled off YouTube. And, you know, yeah, you saved the day by throwing the episode up onto your website. So not only that, you know, our listeners could find it, but your listeners could hear it also.
Yeah, and get turned on to the podcast, right on. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you have, you know, you championed this podcast right from the outset. You gave us shout outs. And, you know, and again, just as Pat said, man, now that I can tell you directly, that has not been forgotten. That it was it's always been appreciated, you know. And the other thing that I want to get into is the fact that you guys have kind of come into some misfortune of your own through the circumstances of the pandemic, and it's been pretty much put you guys on a temporary kind of put a temporary halt to your show.
Yeah, and it's kind of indefinite too.
Like, well, are you hearing anything from the University of Richmond? Like, what's going on with that?
No. So, and we're kind of a latent victim of the pandemic too. You know, so you know when the shit hit the fan with the pandemic, you know, right, like mid March. You know, so we had done our last before it got crazy. We did our last show like in early March. And I think if I remember correctly, it was like early March, like the 3rd or something like that. So we would have been due to do a show like on, looking at my calendar, like March 10th. I remember for some reason we didn't. I think Todd was traveling and I might have had something going on. My schedule was crazy. And we can, you know, switch over to automation when we need to. There's, you know, the station's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's not like, you know, like the old days where we used to always have to, you know, work really hard to get a substitute to fill the spot or anything. And I remember I didn't do a show on March 10th. But then if you guys remember, like, you know, it was like that weekend, that later. Because remember how fast everything kind of hit us, you know, the pandemic? All of a sudden you went from, like, not worrying about anything, you know, kids going to school. Hey, how was your day? How was your grades or whatever? To, like, yeah. Holy crap, you know, we're not, like, never mind, I'm not going on vacation, you know, to Europe this summer. I'm not leaving my house. Like, you know, yeah. and everything, I went crazy. So initially in March,
the sky started falling basically.
Right. And then, right. And I didn't want to go to the station anyway. You know, Todd, not right. Cause we weren't supposed to go anywhere and things were crazy. We were all trying to figure it out. We're all trying to understand what's going on in our world. And so for the first couple of weeks, you know, we didn't do the show, like, you know, in mid-March, maybe, you know, second or third or fourth weeks of March. And then, you know, because right, we're all busy, like, hunting down, like, you know, groceries and various things and taking care of that. But then by in early April, we kind of started working out that we did our show virtually. So I had some gear here. I have a mixer, a microphone. We were doing it via Zoom. But the reality was we were kind of piecing a show together. We weren't doing a radio show live. We were we would kind of put our playlist together. We would get together on the phone, and just like they do on satellite radio, we would backtalk, backlist a set of music that we didn't actually play. We just knew it was in our set list, and we would piece it together digitally later. So that's
that
what we did.
Like the way we work.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say that, Mike. You're 100% correct. It's exactly what we do with the Christmas episodes.
Or any show for that matter.
Right. And yeah. I mean, and personally yes. And which was cool because it kind of got us through for a while. And that's what we did probably for most of April and May. We did that. But for me personally, it was a bit, you know, it's a lot more work. As you guys know, once you record everything, you might have all those song files and then all your, you know, talking files. You might have some bed music you're working in there. You got to piece all that together, put that puzzle together and come up with a finished product.
That a little bit later, too, because that's one of my many questions for you. But we'll get
that's
into
Mike,
that a little bit ahead.
I want to say right off the bat, that's Mike's territory, and I can't thank Mike enough because he's the one who pieces that all together. He's definitely the producer of this show without any question.
That's so the role I play with Todd and I.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I just wanted to throw the shout out to my, you know, to my podcast partner because the guy is, you know, he's the Wizard of Oz. He's the guy behind the curtain. You know, and it sounds like that. You know, that's what you are to your show as well.
It makes me fucking nuts sometimes, man. Because you know, I mean, just putting one show together, and I mean, you know, with our regular shows, man, it's just us talking, and it's the bulk of the show is. You know, the show, it's the conversation. So, it's
right.
Just, you know, it's just editing and mixing, although I haven't done any mixing with because post-pandemic, all I'm doing is recording phone calls and just throwing it on an MP3. That's all I'm doing. I'm not doing much mixing at all. I'm not EQing it. I'm not using any compression. I'm not doing anything that I would normally do with our shows. And I'm just tacking on our intro music and then our closing music.
Just clip the ends, yeah, right.
So when I'm listening to Aaron's shows and it's got all these little snippets of films and
commercials, like old commercials and stuff,
just like old footage of things, and I'm like, that's what we did for the Christmas episodes, and I kind of took your format, you know, Aaron in New Memphis, Egypt with Aaron and Todd, and I said, you know what, we're gonna do like we made that deliberately. You know, to kind of have that feel of your show.
Yeah.
Because your show reminds me of the classic, you know, like Idiot's Delight, you know, Vince Scalza and Mixed Bag, you know, the old Pete Fornatel things that he used to do on Sunday mornings.
Yep.
Where with this big, just eclectic mix of things. And,
Jim Monahan now from DHA does a Sunday morning show, all mixed up. I like it a lot.
But that's what we were going for. So what I wanted to ask you, my long-winded question here is, when you're doing that live, I'm assuming it's live, right?
In normal circumstances, it's all live.
So if do you have somebody, do you have an engineer behind a window or something? Or so is one of you guys just putting in those little snippets of clips, or how is it, like, who's doing what?
So I do that live. So I kind of put it together and I add those snippets in just like it's a song in the set list. Mm. So Todd and I work very differently. So I'm the guy, I need to know exactly what I'm going to play in what order for my portion of the show.
So Todd, you're the Mike DiRico of your show. Okay.
And Todd is the Pat. Exactly. Yeah. You know, because Todd riffs more. He's more of the moment. You know, I'm more A-type. I need to be structured. I want a song to segue into the next song in a certain way sometimes.
That's the tough part, man. And if you're doing it live, it's got to be nerve-wracking. Like, I could time anything, but I got to, you know, I got to be able to do it ahead of time, you know. Everything is timed perfectly, and I'm editing, and I'm splicing. When I'm splicing, you know, the old-fashioned way of, you know, using actual tape and a little piece of chalk and a cutting board. But
so basically, you guys are the the Fred Norris of the Howard Stern Show, and I'm just the big old fat Artie Lang.
Hey, you said it, brother.
Yeah, no, I'll take that to the bank every week. I have no problem. I have no problem with that. So actually, you know, Aaron, you were just saying that. Okay, you brought us into April, and you're still cutting the show, doing it
so,
Zoom,
right?
Which is really cool.
We did, yeah. So we did like a few months of virtual shows, and you know, they were okay to kind of get us through because we still wanted to connect. We still wanted to, you know, our show is the catalyst for us to continue to seek out new music and, you know, listen to the latest, right? And, you know, so we, you know, we kind of kept it going that way. And but then eventually, in early June, I believe it was, we were able to kind of get back into the studio, which was great. We're just kind of doing our old thing, you know, trying not to, you know, be a bummer and talk about the pandemic too much. You know, our Richmond concert rundown went away, you know, because there was no concerts to discuss. And we did our show for pretty much for all of June and July. And in mid-July, we had our 11-year anniversary.
Wow. Yeah.
And then we did our last show on July 28th, I believe it was. And that's the show that Mike was just referencing. I think it was me solo. I don't remember where Todd was. Because I had done earlier in the year in 1980, look back, you know, looking back 40 years. And I did like a part two of it at the end of July. But I had missed so much, you know, the first time around.
Right.
And then the next thing I know, we're getting a letter from the professor that oversees like the station for the university, and kind of telling us that community DJs like Todd and I are, because with students coming back now in August, the university, you know, the legal minds of the university decided that there could be no visitors on campus. And we're defined as a visitor, you know, the community DJs, the community volunteers that work at the station could not come back for, you know, and at the state, you know, the station would be, you know, student run. Now, you know, the reality of it is at WDC, it's not like, you know, college radio from when I was, you know, at Rutgers in the early 80s and stuff, it's much different now. I don't see the passion for it like there used to be. You know, to get on WRSU back in 1984, if you wanted to get your foot in the door, you were doing the 3 to 5 a.m. shift, you know, on maybe Saturday night or something. That was it, you know, just to kind of get yourself started. But, you know, these days, like a station like DCE is very reliant on community volunteers to have that sort of that stability, that consistency across the schedule, and especially during the summertime or during, you know, traditional college holiday periods. Mm-hmm. So it's really disappointing, you know, not only for the station to do that, but for me, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. You know, it's not a very logical decision on the part. So it's not the station's decision, it's the university's decision. You know, it's easy to socially distance when you're transitioning between radio shows. Somebody could leave a song on, spray a bit of Lysol around, wipe down a few things, walk out of the station. You could be waiting in the lounge, and then, you know, come on in and do your show. In most shows, it's, you know, one or two people doing it, and then, you know, and then off you go. Same thing. You don't have to interact with anybody. But the problem is that it's just that, like, but at the same time, university students aren't quarantined on campus. They can go to a local bar or a sandwich shop or whatever, go hang out or do whatever. And then, you know, do their thing on campus. If I wanted to walk on campus, like if I just to go exercise, the campus isn't shut down. People can come and go on it. So it's a bit of a drag, you know. So you see what their policies are overall. And because they call the universities now under code red, they call it. And so that's what's precluding us from getting back, you know, to going back in the studio. And the real kick in the ass is, so they have a temporary schedule in place right now. And somebody has like part of our hour. This is kind of like a part of our period. And, you know, because the time slot we've done for the last 11 years, like now somebody else is kind of doing it. And you build up a bit of a listenership or audience over the course of over a decade. And then all of a sudden now, you know, some dude that would call you occasionally, maybe drunk, you know, who knows, right? Just having a good time, but or maybe with some cool insights or whatever. So, you know, we did have people that would listen to us regularly. Then all of a sudden, you know, there's some co-ed now, you know, kind of in your spot, kind of in, you know, hey, what happened to Aaron and Todd, you know what I mean? So that's kind of a drag. And there's no, unlike our kids, Pat, going back to school, we don't have any kind of date in the future, you know, if they hit certain health metrics, hey, you know, you guys should be able to go back. So it's really, you know, the unknown and, you know, the fact that it's indefinite is really kind of the drag for Todd and I, you know.
You go
so
from
the people that are. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you go from Aaron and Todd at your drive, at the drive time to like Charlie Hornblower all of a sudden. You know what I mean? He's playing the same stuff over and over and over again. I totally dig what you're saying.
Well, my question is Charlie Hornblower is because you guys are considered visitors. Is Charlie Hornblower now students?
Half faculty,
or just people that are, you know, now actual students that are filling that space?
Yeah, so now it's students. Because, you know, Todd and I enjoyed a prime, like, you know, 9 to 11 spot. So, so that's one that's, you know, so a student has that right now.
I really dug what you said too about the local stuff. Some of the college kids losing the passion for it. Just reminded me of you were mentioned Rutgers. I was more of an SOU guy back in the day, out of Seton Hall,
which is a great state, 89.5, I think, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. And some of those guys went on to become really good DJs. You know, I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but he worked at DHA, and there's just, you know, they were passionate about what they did, and nowadays. It's just, you know, I don't know. I hate to throw this reference out there, but it's like the Simpsons guy. The pimple-faced kid is always selling home or something that's not good for him. That's the guy that's running their station now or running a radio show now, and he just doesn't give a shit. He goes, oh, I don't know, sir. Here you go. And,
Todd and I made it.
Did you guys get hit with a power outage during your 11th anniversary on the air show?
We did.
Yeah,
that's right. We did.
That's what
it was quick.
Blackout.
As
you mentioned, your 11th anniversary.
Yeah, it was really quick, but it shut down all the computers and everything.
I remember reading your post on. And then I was like, you know, you said something about the computers. And like how, because you're live, how badly did it fuck you up, or did it fuck you up at all?
It did a little bit. It throws us off. Todd likes to work off the PCs. I put a lot of my music onto CDs because I can control it. I like how I can control the playing of it on the equipment in the studio. So I don't remember at what point in the show that the power linked off, but it was, like I said, it was enough to shut everything down, and then, you know, then eventually everything kind of went back up pretty quickly. But you know how a computer is, it needs to boot back up again. So it put Todd out of commission, like for when you're doing a radio show, minutes are hours, you know, right?
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah.
So we were like, oh, holy cow. So then I guess we were just talking, riffing a little bit. And then we had to go into like some more of the music that I had brought. So I think we just kind of rearranged our planned set list for the 2 hours so that gave Todd some time to get the computers working. Because I think when it shut down, it also requested some specific password to get onto the computer that we didn't have. So we got jammed up pretty good there. So forgot about that.
This half hour is going to be Aaron only music from the old dinosaur CD.
Yeah.
I also want to ask you, man, all of your shows open with, Memphis, Egypt, by the Mekons.
Yeah.
What was it about that song, that name, to where it became the name of your show? What is the significance in it, and how it relates to what you're doing?
You know, it's funny. So, I mean, for me personally, absolutely nothing, Mike. Because Todd used to do the show with a mutual buddy of ours named Winston before I joined Todd. Mm-hmm. So Todd already had the name. It was just called Memphis Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd's a huge Mekons fan, like huge, like just crazy. So he talks
your
about
show
it.
Introduced me to the Mekons. So I
yeah,
kinda,
and sort of Todd introduced yeah. me to the Mekons as well. You know, right. And so it was really Todd's because Todd actually attended the University of Richmond. And
yeah.
he worked at the station as a student 40 years ago, back in 1980. Yeah, he has great stories about the Violent Femmes coming in and doing concerts and him picking them up at the train station, all kinds of stuff back in the day.
Wow.
I think
we're interviewing the wrong guy.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, you are.
I'm totally messing with you, Harry.
But so it was originally, you know, Todd, and then when and our buddy Winston, he moved out to Charlottesville. And he came to me because Todd and I were we were already friends because I know I work for Samsung, and here when Circuit City was still in business, you guys remember Circuit City, right? The big consumer electronics chain.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of like the Best
yeah.
Buy competitor. So
yeah.
they're based here in Richmond. That's why I moved to Richmond. So since we had like a big customer here, when the National, which is a historic theater, was renovated in like 2006, 2007, Samsung was able to secure a very cool corporate sponsorship. It was one of these things where I was able just to roll in at any time and get up in the mezzanine box and see Willie Nelson or B-52s or whatever.
Yeah, I noticed that you spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, right. I mean, especially, I was like a high roller back in the day for a couple of years there.
Yeah.
And then Todd worked at Circuit City, and Todd would always take advantage of the free tickets we would offer to our account, our customer, you know, so we got to know each other that way. And so when Winston moved, Todd approached me. He's like, "Hey man, you know, would you want to do the radio show with me?" And I'll never forget, you know, I did a little bit of college radio. I used to do Livingston College. I went to Rutgers, but I lived on Livingston campus, and Livingston had a like closed circuit radio, right? So it would go to the dorms and the cafeteria,
yeah.
and that was about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So I did a little bit of that there. So I didn't have a lot of experience with radio, but I'll never forget the first time I joined Todd to do the show. And then I'm doing the show with Todd, and Todd was like, "Hey, I gotta get on a call with China for work. You know, are you okay with everything?" And I'm like, "Wait, I guess I don't know." You know, it's like, and it was really like trial by fire. He kind of just threw me out there. And meanwhile, he's in the lounge on some business call, you know, in another time zone, and I'm in the studio doing my very first radio show. And that's kind of how it started. So I kind of a long winded answer to this though, but it was because that song was very important to Todd, and you know, being a huge Mekons fan.
So
there's nothing lyrically in the song that I can really connect to the show, but it is kind of an interesting, you know, interesting name.
Yeah,
we get a lot
absolutely.
Of questions about it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So with your experience from the closed circuit stuff, you already had like the board experience and stuff. So that when he did go out and take that call, you had some sort of idea of what the heck you were doing.
Yeah. Okay. It's actually a little bit more easier these days than it was in the old days, in the early 80s, where we had like carts and stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, these days, you know, even when we started together doing it in July of 2009, you know, everything's kind of digital.
Digital.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's digital. Yeah. They've definitely made stuff like that so much easier. They really have.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. I mean, a lot of these students, they come in and they completely do their show off their laptop.
Excellent.
You're playing some stuff off Spotify, and that's all they're doing, you know. But I like to spin records or put something
yeah.
on CD, or, you know, a lot of the movie clips and sound effects or whatever that we play is I grab it and then put it onto a CD.
I hate to reference Howard Stern again, but I mean Fred Norris right there. He still uses it, man. He pulls it, he puts it on carts, and he still uses it. It's just such a cool old school thing for a guy like that to still do. I haven't listened to him in a long time, but I mean, it's no secret that I'm a huge fan of theirs. But just, you know, just that experience alone, and you know, he's one of those really old school guys. He dates all of us, and for him to still practice that is just it's just a really cool historical radio type thing.
Yeah, I guess you get, you know, you form habits and a way of how you like to approach your job and a way of doing things, and you kind of, you know, you stick with it, right?
Sure, yeah, if it works, right.
Yeah.
Everything I use, everything I do is MP3s now. It's just everything is straight onto the software and then just mixed together. So, I mean, it's the easiest way for me. But, I mean, that's conducive to the show that we do, you know? I mean, when we're not
right.
dealing with anything live, then it's just something that I could just splice and thread together. And, you know, I mean, as long as the finished product is kind of what counts, I guess.
It really is. But there's also the process, too. You know, because the one thing, you know, that the reason that we're not doing the virtual shows currently, what kind of took a little bit of a break, for me and Todd, we weren't enjoying it as much as when we got together in the studio, because it was like we were hanging out for a couple hours. So sometimes mm-hmm. we bring in a couple beers, you know, and mm-hmm. we're hanging out, we're talking music, and we're playing music. He's playing music for me, I'm playing music for him in a way, you know, as well as for our show. You know, so you're interested in what the other guy kind of brought to the table that week, and you're there listening to music and chatting, you know, during sets and any kind of break, and, you know, and some, maybe a conversation you're having off mic works its way into an on-air, you know, conversation and such. So we liked, and then the post editing is a hell of a lot easier, you know, like Mike was saying earlier, you know, if you have a conversation, if you have a whole show there, it's already kind of put together. All you do is maybe edit up the ends a little bit.
You just tack on the beginning and you tack on the end.
Yeah, you know, and then you're good to go. Yeah. You don't have all these puzzle pieces to assemble, you know.
Yeah.
No, Pat.
I was going to say, no, and it, but who knows, you know, if this nonsense lasted, you know, much longer, I'm sure Todd and I are going to be like, all right, let's kind of got to do something here. So we'll kind of get back. That way we can, you know, keep our website updated with some fresh content, you know, at the very least, and kind of keep things going a little bit.
I'm totally glad you just said that, because that was going to lead into my question. Did the university offer you to continue to virtually do your show and just keep the time slot and everything like that?
No, so it's difficult. We're not able to broadcast live when we do it virtually. So we can put the show together. We can even send it in, so it could be part of the automation. It's a lot of labor to do. The station wants to go with this kind of temporary schedule that they have. So we're taking a step back, we're going to wait it out a little bit and see. But you know, there's quite a number of us at the station, you know, community DJs. You know, Sundays are all jazz and stuff. That's almost exclusively community DJs, you know, and, you know, the older dudes that do the classical shows and all that kind of stuff. So it's a, hopefully we'll be able to get back there soon. And it's certainly easy to put protocols in place so that nobody's health is adversely you know, affected or in jeopardy. Exactly, Pat.
Yeah,
you know?
There's so, definitely.
We'll see.
Where I work, I don't want to really say it on air, but it's the same thing. There's like you said, there's protocols in place that are designed to alleviate that. You know, to not maybe even alleviate it, but to at least suppress it somewhat to where, you know, it's still a working environment or a functioning environment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, two dudes down in the basement of the studio. Yeah, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
How it's going to spread from there?
Yeah.
So
it's not like it's the 70s and there's a whole studio full of people partying and drinking and doing all kinds of illegal.
Right.
Activity.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You kind of can't bring bands into play or anything like that. But,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can still conduct a radio show. That's for sure. And kind of keep it all going, especially these days when maybe, you know, more people are listening to radio now or you know, at home and. Yeah. So who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see.
That's certainly true.
Yeah.
It's amazing what this whole pandemic did for people in general. I mean, I'll spin it real quick with the baseball card thing. You know, I'm amazed at how quickly the hobby took off again and where it's gotten. But you know, people are home, and if you're in your attic, like you said, maybe Aaron, and you're like, oh shit, there's my baseball cards, and you just start thumbing through them, boom, you're hooked again. It's nothing that's, you know, it's hobbies like that are like narcotics, man. If you're passionate and addicted to something like that, like it just brings that full force again. And that, I think that had a lot to do with the card collecting.
That's true.
Again.
That's true. You know, I mean, the one thing that I was just pleased that survived the pandemic was my local record store, you know, which had shut down for a couple months. And I was just, you know, I was worried that, it's a small independent little record store, here in Richmond that I patronize. I go there regularly. Usually I'll go there every Friday. And that was one business that I was quite worried about. And I'm glad he came through on the other side. And it's funny, you know, business, you know, from talking to my buddy Jay, who owns Deep Groove Records here in Richmond, Virginia, a business has never been better. You know, he says it's unbelievable since he, you know, opened back up again. I was still able to get records from him during the pandemic, but it would be like I'd have to text him, tell him what I wanted, I'd text him my credit card info, and then I'd wave to him in the front door, and he'd put my bag like on the ledge out by the window. He was very careful. Yeah, wow. It was almost like I was scoring a bag of weed or something. You know, it's just like, you know, it's just you know, buying some records. You know, he'd kind of open the door, put the bag there, and then shut the door again.
Dave's not here.
Yeah.
How often are you buying? Well, now you say you regularly go on a Friday. How often are you walking out of there with something new and or old? Every week you're buying something new?
Just about every week. I mean, there's certainly some times where I just don't get there weekly, but I'm at least there three Fridays out of the month for sure.
That's fantastic.
No, I'm always – I still like to buy my music on vinyl. I pretty much buy all my music exclusively on vinyl, and it's a mix. You know, I love digging through the used bins. You know, Deep Groove there, it's a well-curated shop. It's small. But I hate a record store where you have to just dig through a bunch of crap to find something good. You know, I don't want to dig through some beat up copies of, you know, Led Zeppelin 2 all the time, or all this, you know, all this Elton John or Jimmy Buffett stuff. That's just, you know, just should be in the garbage can because it's such terrible condition. It's a well curated shop, so
that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, it makes the experience a lot more enjoyable as well.
Yeah,
you know, when you know all the product there is. Good.
I dug through a stack of crap, and was just like, "Oh my God!" In my head, I'm going, "Geez, I gotta pee. Am I gonna still dig through this whole thing, or just buy something and go?" And I stumbled upon actually Ozzy's Diary of a Madman. It wasn't in the greatest of shape, but it was. And I popped it out. I looked at it. It looked like it was playable and stuff. Sure enough, it actually plays really well. So I was like, "Okay, this is a good find in this whole bin that I just went through." I'm just.
No, I buy, you know, I'll buy used, and but I also like to buy. I'll buy all my music, you know, any music that I want to purchase new. I've kind of been buying a lot of I've been kind of getting into jazz a little bit more, trying to educate myself in that genre a little bit. So I'll buy, I buy a lot of new jazz records or reprints. Blue Note's been putting out a lot of cool reissues and such, so I've been picking those up. But even recently, during this whole pandemic, I've been like a big TCM guy, you know, Turner Classic Movies. So I watch a lot of that. And I don't know if you guys caught it, but around, I think it was like around Labor Day weekend, they did a whole like weekend of like music documentaries.
Ooh.
They did they did like the Tammy Show, but they did the Decline of Western Civilization, both part one and the heavy metal part two. And then like Hard Day's Night was one of the movies one night. And I kind of I sat and watched Hard Day's Night, and I'm like, man, you know, that is, like, you kind of forget sometimes, right? Like, don't you like always like sometimes or often rediscover like a classic record or something that maybe you were completely sick of, like, you know, some early Beatles music, but I kind of totally rediscovered A Hard Day's Night. And I wound up buying like a nice reissued Parlophone reissue of Hard Day's Night not too long ago. And I've been listening to that quite often. So, but yeah, there's so much, you know, that's the great thing about record collecting is that you're always, I mean, it doesn't matter. I've been doing it since the late 70s, and I'm always learning. I'm always discovering new music, and I'm not necessarily new music, but something that's new to me, you know, something in the historical archives of recorded music, you know, that I wasn't aware of, you know, and for me, a lot of times that's been, you know, most recently it's been jazz. 'Cause I don't know about you guys, but like, you know, for instance, like, if you hear a Zeppelin song or a Stone song, even if you're not like, I don't know, Pat, like, I know you mentioned once before, like, hey, you're not the hugest Stones fan, which is right, or whatever, but you will know a Stone song when you hear it.
Sure.
So you know the difference, perhaps, you know, when you hear like a John Coltrane and a Lee Morgan song, like, It's hard to differentiate, you know, right? Like when you listen to different jazz, you might know like Dave Brubeck's Take Five. Yeah, I know that one.
Right.
But do you know your Hank Mobley from your Coleman Hawkins? Like,
And you're challenging yourself in that regard, which is it you're not only enjoying it, but there's a challenge I kind of understand what you mean. That's really cool. I want to rewind just a little because my thing with Hard Day's Night, my thing was kind of similar. It was Neil Peart dying from Rush,
mm-hmm.
and Farewell to Kings was just in my rotation almost every day. I just listened to the record over and over and over again.
Right.
And before the pandemic, Primus was supposed to be at Asbury Park over the summer, and they were going to play the entire Farewell to Kings record. And I mean, I was like primed to go. I was ready to go. I'm like, are you kidding me? The Primus Live is just, oh, yeah, okay, let's do it. And that record in particular, and then, you know, Neil dies, and you're like, oh, wow, they're going to do the whole record. But that thing was just heavy in my rotation. I love that, how you found the movie, the Hard Day's Night movie, and you went back and you're okay, let's plug out a Beatles record. And stuff like that is great.
Yeah. You know, it's just it's always about constant discovery and learning, or maybe reinforcing something that you knew at one point and, you know, haven't thought about in 25 years, you know.
Mike, didn't you just post something that you'd gotten a Coltrane record, or were you listening to a Coltrane?
No,
maybe when we were talking, you were listening to Coltrane?
No, I do listen to a lot of jazz, but like Aaron said, I'm not at a point where I could tell the difference between, I'm very jazz 101. So I'm
me
still
too.
Very much Miles and John Coltrane and all of, you know, I've gotten past the phase of the obvious. So where you have your Zeppelin IVs and Ziggy Stardust and Who's Next and Tommy and, you know, the obvious, you know, Houses of the Holy, you know, the obvious albums, but there are the jazz has the equivalent, and one of those albums is Kind of Blue by Miles Davis.
Right, well, actually,
Miles. Okay,
the most popular jazz album in the history of all popular music, man.
Right.
1959, which is arguably the biggest year in jazz, because you had all these masterpieces come out. You know, and he also mentioned Take Five. There was an album called Time Out that Dave Brubeck did. And Blue Train came out in 59. And Mingus put out a classic album in 59. I listen to a lot of, it's mostly Jazz 101, man. But I bought this, years ago, I had this really shitty version of Kind of Blue. And it just wasn't playable. Because when I finally got my new turntable 3 years ago, because I got back into collecting, I got this used, you know, copy of Kind of Blue, and it was just not really playable. It's like I wasted my money. I paid $15 for it, which for a piece of shit is a lot of money.
Yeah, heck yeah.
So when I finally found, I was like, you know what, man, it was the first time I went back into our local record store. So I went in there with, I said, you know, I'm gonna drop some money in here, man. I'm gonna buy some new vinyl. I never had a copy, believe it or not, Aaron. I've never had a copy of Bob Dylan's Oh Mercy on vinyl. You know, I had that when I first bought that. It was on CD.
Right. I think me too.
And, so I finally got a vinyl copy of Oh Mercy. You know, it's at 180 gram.
Right. Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I found Miles Davis Kind of Blue. So I was like, okay, cool. I finally have a nice copy on vinyl. I hope it sounds good. But I opened it up. The vinyl was actually blue. So I'm like, cool, man. I mean, I don't know, you know, and that's another thing I found out since I've been collecting again. I got back into vinyl since this, you know, around the summer of 2016. And between Discogs and the Steve Hoffman forum, I've come to learn that, you know, I may be somewhat a music snob that I've always been, man. But I'm not really an audiophile, so I don't know if the version of Kind of Blue I have is considered great or if it's considered shit, man. Because I don't know if you've ever read that forum. You know, you think you've got something great, and next thing you know, you've got 1,000 people tearing it apart. You know, so but I think it sounds great, man. And so it was kind of like a nice little surprise that I got this thing.
Did they were you overcharged for that record because it was blue vinyl?
It was $15.
Wow.
It's like the used piece of shit I bought 2 years ago.
Wow, good for you.
You know? So it was I was like, fuck yeah, man. You know?
Good for you. That was a nice one.
I write a lot, as you know, and I just finished a book that's coming out in about 6 weeks.
I'm excited
And I had this conversation with Mike Nirenberg that when we write, he's able to listen to like crazy shit, like punk, and just like, you know, he's listening to punk with vocals and all kind of crazy stuff, man. I can't listen to vocals, man. So I listen to a lot of jazz. I listen to a lot of classical when I'm writing.
Yep.
But when, like what Aaron said, can you tell the difference between Art Blakey and Coleman Hawkins or something like that, you know? And I've gotten into the next phase where I've gone off the track of 101 and I'm listening to people I never really heard of or just never got to. So I'm kind of gone into that next level of jazz, but I'm listening to it as background to when I'm writing. So I'm not really like grokking it, man. You know, it's not really like sinking in, you know.
I hear you.
It's kind of been my next level of, that's my next, as on my to-do list, is to get some of that stuff on vinyl. And when I'm finally done to submit this book, I'm going to just do jack shit for the next 3 months and just catch up on watching movies and just sitting and chilling and listening to albums, because I've had no time to do any of that.
Subconsciously, though, I think you're setting yourself up for that in a good way. In that, as you were writing and you had that playing in the background, your mind is already open to it. You know, you're ready. You've taught yourself to listen for different things.
Taking it in subconsciously.
Yeah, when that time comes, it's just going to be, you know, that transition is going to be really smooth. I mean, me with draw, like I used to draw a lot more than I don't really draw too much more anymore. But I did a lot of abstract art, really just wicked stuff. And I had a lot of people who used to do hallucinogenics, if you will, and they were always looking for different things in my art, and I would place stuff in there intentionally. But I was always listening to like Slayer and the lyrics and everything, and because it was just so chaotic, and I always thought of my drawings as chaotic. So it was that mood, and like, you know, Mike, what you're saying is that, you know, I dig that what you're saying, and that you had that like jazz with no vocal playing in that background, and that kind of puts you in that zone. And I think all three of us can agree in that we all take something like that out of the music that we listen to, whatever you're, you know what I mean? And most people do. Whatever mood you're in, that you're ready to shift that mood and that tempo, and you're ready to just go. And, you know, maybe I was going 175 miles an hour and Mike was only doing 75 feet at that point. But, you know, it's always great. I love music for that reason. I always frown upon people who are like, oh, well, this sucks and that sucks. I might not be a fan of the Stones or the Who or AC/DC. I respect the shit out of those bands because they're hugely successful, and they're not that way for no reason,
right?
Steely Dan, that's a good one, Aaron. Because I know I got to bring up a part of your show. You did the Desert Island Song, a song that you could listen to over and over and over again. And yes, I could listen to Steely Dan any time of the day. I don't care what mood I'm in. I could be in a bad mood, a good mood, a sad mood, whatever. And I give you the 17 minute song by Pink Floyd, Dogs. And I remember you saying, I think you were posting it, or you might have even said it, you're like, yeah, I did not expect this one from you. I'm sure you expected some deep track from Steely Dan. I said, I'm going to throw everybody off. Why not?
And you took up half their show.
He played a piece of it. He didn't play the whole version of it, which was cool because I knew, and I didn't do it to steal airtime. Obviously, it's just it happens to be one of my top five favorite songs of all time. It's clearly my favorite Pink Floyd record, and that song is in my top five of all time. Probably, I wouldn't even say probably, it is.
Well, I totally agree with you, Pat, because you mentioned it on the last show. And I walk every morning, and that's when I would listen to the podcast when a new one comes out. And I remember shaking my head yes, because I was so funny. I felt the same way, because Animals and Wish You Were Here were my two favorite Pink Floyd records. And then at the same time, Dark Side of the Moon kind of wallows at the bottom of the list a little bit. And then I always thought that was sort of a very unorthodox, you know, thought to the Pink Floyd's catalog. And then when you guys kind of reinforced my belief, I was like, all right.
Yeah.
I feel like that about a lot of obvious great albums that are not, you know, by any means lesser just because we don't like them. Number one, you know, I feel that way about Sgt. Pepper, man. I put that, it's a masterpiece, but it's still at the bottom of my list. Dark Side of the Moon is at the bottom of my list. You know, it's one of the greatest fucking albums of the 70s, but coming to, you know, if you're dealing with Pink Floyd records, man, there are just like 8 or 9 Floyd records that I like more.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's as simple as that.
They did so much
experimentation, man.
They did so much experimentation on that Dark Side of the Moon record. I mean, I can't hate it. I'm a Floyd fan, so I really can't hate it. And it's still better than the stuff that Gilmore put out in the 80s. Those were more like Gilmore solo records.
Right.
And, you know, and the final cut was basically Roger Waters getting into Hitchhikers already. But the I do dig the experimentation that they were doing on it, the different sounds they were making with the studio equipment that they had at that point. And, you know, and then taking that show out live and trying to get that stuff into the keyboards. It was just, it's a good record. You know, I mean, it spent all that time in the top 200. So it's more than a good record, but I love hearing it. Like Aaron, I'm going to touch on Aaron's point. I love hearing that the three of us are so much in agreement on that record. And then, it's weight off my shoulders.
And it's still the, like, again, if you're coming up against anybody that doesn't like rock music or somebody that's new to rock music, not that Pink Floyd is actual rock music, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, Dark Side of the Moon is essential, and I'll go to my grave defending it as one of the most important albums ever recorded. If there is a Sgt. Pepper of the 70s, man, I think it's arguably that, you know, something that just kind of broke ground, you know, the albums that break ground and kind of set the template for things that come after for like the next decade or so. I'd say
that's a good point.
I am sick of it, man. I don't want to hear it anymore.
It's shopping to a whole nother level, especially in the United States, because money was, I guess, if you want to say, as close to a single as you were going to get off of that record. And that kind of broke them in the United States to be this huge force to be reckoned with. And yeah, I can agree with what you have to say.
Yeah, I mean, and even, you know, no Dark Side of the Moon, perhaps, no Wish You Were Here, no Animals. I mean, and they kind of, right? I mean, in a way, you know.
Sure, absolutely.
Brought them into that mainstream, radio, what's the word I'm looking for?
Radio friendly?
It brought them to another level of popularity where albums Wish You Were Here and tours, like mega tours, like playing the stadiums, man. It just put them on the next level.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, who knows Obscured by Clouds? If you ask somebody what's Obscured by Clouds, they wouldn't even know it's a Pink Floyd record. You know, it was the one that came out right before Dark Side of the Moon, you know.
And that point, what point were they on Capitol? Because I know Harvest was the label for some of those early 70s records. But, you know, my point was, if at some point, did they have, commercial success, do you think Floyd would have been dropped or even signed to a new contract?
Well, I mean, they were on Harvest all the way through at least The Wall.
Oh, were they? See, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Now, are they a subsidiary? Are they like a subsidiary of Capitol or something?
That's a good question, Pat. I'm not 100% sure. Oh, I think, you know what? I think they are.
Yeah,
I think they are.
Goes back into my own knowledge of vinyl collecting, man. Because
there was a guy from Capitol that had a heavy hand in getting them to write something that was going to sell in the States. That was their main objective at that point when Dark Side came out. Is they needed to get they were popular all over, you know, London and England, stuff like that, but they weren't getting the huge hit and the huge punch that they needed in the United States. And then in comes Money, which again was as close to a radio friendly record from them or a radio friendly song that you were going to get from them at that point. But I do think that if I'm not mistaken, I could go back and check, I might be wrong, and I'll definitely correct myself if I was in a future show. But I think that there was a guy from Capitol who was really like responsible for pushing them to get some radio, something that was going to be radio friendly for the States.
Yeah. And I think Harvest was an imprint of Capitol, I think.
Okay.
It's not even like the stuff on Dark Side of the Moon was even radio friendly. You know, it's almost kind
of
like, remember what Michael Stipe said about, Aaron, you're an REM fan, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you remember what Michael Stipe said around the time that Out of Time came out, and it was like, you know, that they were caught up with the mainstream, and Stipe was like, well, you know, radio, you know, we didn't catch up with radio. Radio caught up with us. You know, and it was kind of like, it's kind of, I think, a Dark Side of the Moon albums, like Dark Side of the Moon, that really aren't radio friendly, especially for the shit, the pure shit that was on the radio, man, in 1973 and 74, man. And, you know, in terms of pop music, you know, you got Tony Orlando and Dawn and, you know, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, just listen to a Casey Kasem countdown from that period,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And you have Dark Side of the Moon on the charts, you know, with all this other stuff. Because, this, you know, if you think of 73 in terms of classic albums, yeah, 73 is a great year. 72 is a great year. 74 is even a great year, man, because all of the great, you know, the Stones albums and what Zeppelin was releasing and Bowie. But that wasn't the pop charts, man, you know? And Floyd was, you know, Pink Floyd had music on the charts, man. It wasn't just FM rock staples.
Well, that's true.
This,
yeah.
That wasn't played on NEW, you know, because that was album format radio. So if you heard Money, you just didn't hear Money. You were hearing A Great Gig in the Sky, which is, you know, probably the only song that wasn't a big radio song.
Well, you know, and if you think about it, it kind of goes back to your last show too. You know, what was like a big song in the summer of 73? Angie, right off Goat's Head Soup.
Number one song. Yeah. So, I mean, there were exceptions, but.
Right. But a lot of it, like I said, you go back to, you look at a Casey Kasem countdown, man, it's, right. It'll be a lot of Neil Sedaka, Captain Tennille or whatever. Maybe not Captain Tennille, maybe a little later. But,
Sonny and Cher.
Yeah.
I'm having your baby.
I'm having my baby.
If I was the carpenter. And you...
Yeah, exactly. You know, so. But no, even, you know, we were talking about, you know, animals, but, you know, and then the same, Mike, you know, like you had referenced previously, like, Goat's Head Soup, you know, we were talking vinyl. We're talking, I picked up Goat's Head Soup, the deluxe version on vinyl. I don't know, what, a few weeks ago when it came out? Remastered, right? So it, you know,
is
it kind of.
Is it sourced from the digital? Is it sourced from the CDs, man? Or is it, you know, sourced from the.
I'm not 100% sure.
That's,
you know,
the only,
like,
thing I'm wary about on these remasters, man.
Sound very good. I mean, I have a nice little system in my office, you know, which is, but of course, there's always the limitations of what you listen, you know, to your music on, right? I mean, I got a little nice little Project turntable and some Klipsch speakers and stuff, but I really bought it though for the bonus material, really, you know. I mean, it is on nice 180-gram vinyl and stuff, but like you had been talking, Mike, the B-side, it's a whole album's worth of, you know, just, you know, different remixes of Dancing with Mr. D or some instrumental stuff, as well as, you know, the Jimmy Page track or a track. That, I am disappointed, though, that there is kind of no, like, outtake of, like, Tops or Waiting on a Friend that came out of that era, but showed up on record, you know, on like Tattoo You, you know, eight years later,
Tops,
you know.
Tops was the other one that I was thinking of, man, that I couldn't think of in the last show.
You know, when I,
right. That was from, that was from the Goat's Head Soup period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And Mike definitely mentioned that when I hear remastered, though, I would love to think that they're going to take the tapes if they're available and actually remaster, re-engineer it from, you know, go right to the board with the tapes that you got. It's not, I mean, the equipment these days is top notch to where you can absolutely isolate different parts of the material to make this pop, make that, you know, softer.
Right.
Something like that.
Hear instruments and instrumentation that you didn't hear the first time around, perhaps.
Right.
Or could,
right.
You know, yeah.
That's what I would be looking for.
No, but it's great. I mean, I love that record too. I mean, the new Goat's Head Soup. But yeah, Mike, if you're looking for to add something to your collection, if you don't have, maybe if you don't have the original Goat's
Every
Head
day
Soup
this week, it. I thought about going out and getting it. I'm still.
It's really,
you know,
nice. It's wonderfully packaged. Yeah, I mean, the original was a gatefold. This is too, but you know, you got two sleeves of vinyl in here, and you know, it's.
I have a really nice copy of Goat's Head on vinyl, man. I the one I have, I mean, it's a reissue from 1977.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds phenomenal, man. And my black and blue, I have, you're an audiophile, right?
Who, me?
Did they call you an audiophile?
No, I don't know. No, I don't get too crazy with that. I don't get too crazy. I mean, I got a nice little system to listen to my records on.
Okay,
but
that's what Sal described you as, man, before I met you.
No, it's more, it's more about the content than the delivery system sometimes for me, you know?
Okay.
So
let me ask both of you guys a question now, because I'm interested in both your answers, because you're both REM fans, and Mike just brought up REM. Do you think that there's ever a possibility of them reuniting, with all these bands reuniting and doing a tour to satisfy their fans and the appetite for not necessarily new music, but doing a tour? I mean, they were hugely successful when they just said, we're done. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't see it. I don't think it's likely that they would. Obviously, they won't get together with Bill Berry, so it would just be, Peter and Mike Mills. But I don't know. I mean, I certainly put their chances better than a Talking Heads reunion, because, the guys still are friendly and on good terms, I don't know. I don't see Michael cashing in on a nostalgia tour for money. And it would be great. And it would be a windfall. It would be great. But it's probably not what he would want to do. And it's because he knows what the fans' expectations are. They're going to want to hear, all the quote unquote hits, I'm thinking, so I don't know. I don't think that it would happen. I don't know what Mike thinks, but
Mike, I just want to interject 2 seconds and then I want to hear Mike's side of it. I totally agree with you about Michael Stipe in that he's not going to do it just to make money. He definitely won't do it to make money. I really admire him for that, and how he, first and foremost, I love his political stance. I think hate it or whatever. I'm all about the message that he's trying to send to people. I'm all about that. So, and for him to stand on his ground, and hold up to his morals and say, this isn't about me. This isn't what I am. And my fans know that.
Right.
And I like that. It makes me admire him even more. And I'm not a huge fan of him. I know their hits, to be honest with you. Mike, what do you got to say about it?
I don't see it happening either. I'm leaning more towards no. Just with the current times, man, it's really got to be a lucrative thing, man, to go to put a tour out on the road, and it, unless it really, really, if they were hurting, like seriously hurting for money, it's like they said that George Harrison only agreed to the Beatles anthology in 94 because he was down to his last 30 million, I think Stipe is involved. He's always been involved in other projects, man. He has his hand in film.
True.
I think, those guys were not party animals, man. They didn't do drugs. They weren't sinking to the bottle of Jack Daniels every night, man. So I think they've played their cards very well in terms of how they've handled their finances. They're very grounded in terms of, who they are philosophically, man. I think that Stipe could have walked away 30 years ago, let alone 10 years ago. I think that's just who he is, man. Would I love to see it? Sure, man. But I mean, especially in today's world, man, rock's place inside the big picture.
You just led me into my point, because I wanted to respond to, like I did to Aaron, I wanted to respond to your answer. When I reviewed the Pearl Jam record, I said that it was a record that we needed right now. I know, Mike, you and I had talked about Bruce's Magic record, that there were songs on that record that shaped the time that the country was in, and we really needed that record. And I feel more so with REM, if they were to release new material, it would just be so relieving. And around what's going on in the environment, I just feel like that would be just huge. It would fill everything. It would fill a void that's not there. I circle back to that Pearl Jam review, because I think the world needed that record right now. It's just somebody
talking about Gigaton, Pat.
Yeah, love that record so much.
The problem with albums like that now, and it kind of falls into the conversation I had a few weeks ago with Mike Nierenberg. We're obviously talking about an album that's an album of music that's going to react, you know, to the age of Trump. All right, let's not, you know, mince words, man. And
no,
politically,
sure.
What's going on, man? And these days, man, it, you know, we're rock artists or any artist for that matter is up against so much, man. We're up against a war against reality. We're up against a war against the media. We're up against a war against any fucking type of artist that so much is gives an opinion,
yeah,
or reflects anything going on in the world in their art,
they get,
man. We're up against
a population
of people, man, that have been brainwashed to say, shut the fuck up and sing. Entertain me. I paid for this ticket, you know? And, you know, I mean, Bruce Springsteen is arguably the biggest rock artist in the world. And he gets shit, man.
Yeah.
You know? And, I mean, REM, you know, they had a very strong, critically respected cult following for the first decade of their existence.
Right.
And they wrote their most crucial songs during that decade when they were on a small label called IRS.
Right.
And then they became, you know, popular for like 5 years before they kind of went back into this thing of, you know, going into this Picasso phase of fucking with their audience, man, and putting out albums like Up and Reveal, and, you know, which to me are awesome, beautiful albums, man, but they kind of serve more as Michael Stipe's solo albums because
right.
he had got so deep into his own lyrical mind, man, and just really stream of conscience, abstract stuff coming out. That they just kind of, they were just so self-indulgent, man, that they really served this Stipe solo albums. But I would love for Michael Stipe to write another song like Welcome to the Occupation or Finest Work Song or, you know, End of the World or Exhuming McCarthy, especially fucking Exhuming McCarthy, man. You know, because this is what we're living through, man, you know?
Yeah.
That's so true.
So... it's, yeah, I would love to see Michael Stipe, REM out there, man, just reacting to Trump, man, and all that's going on in the world, man, especially, I mean, yeah, do we need it? Yeah. Is it going to happen? I don't see it, man. I don't see it.
Are you a fan of Gigaton, Aaron?
Oh, absolutely. That album surprised me when I heard it, you know, earlier this year. I was like, wow, they're kind of... You know, after 7 years since their last record, you know, coming
right.
back in such, you know, a return to form, as they say, right, in the
yeah.
in the record
in,
review.
Yeah. It hit home on a lot of levels.
Yeah, but I am a fan of the reunion tour, Pat. I mean, I love, you know, I've seen, like, you know, last several years I've seen, like, Adamant or Psychedelic Furs or Violent Femmes. And as long as they can pull it off and not embarrass themselves, you know, I love hearing all those old hits and the songs that they were known for. And, you know, it's fun to go out and have a night of that type of music, you know, kind of relive your past, perhaps, you know. It's a great way for a band to make money, too. That's for darn sure. So.
Oh, without a doubt. I've talked at length about the Black Sabbath 13 record, and they did that reunion and that tour, and it was just, you know, obviously the other three guys needed more of the money than Ozzy because he's been putting records out religiously. But it was just really cool, and you know, it was just a great tour for that band, and it was fun. Obviously I'd never gotten to see them. I was younger when those records came out. Speaking of Ozzy, we had another death in the rock world. As Rock Under Fire always does, we bring a death to your doorstep. Lee Kerslake, man.
from Uriah Heep and Ozzy's solo records.
Yeah,
no,
it's a drummer, right?
Yeah, drummer.
Yeah.
Now, didn't Ozzy in the last year there was a story about Ozzy going to visit him or sending him a gold album or something because he was dying, and
he probably told him to go fuck himself because him and Sharon have been at it for decades. Sharon, I'm going to say this verbatim. Sharon, was it to him or to the other guy? Sharon basically said, go for it. I will cut your balls off. I will cut your effing balls off.
I think Ozzy overrode Shannon, his wife's conflict with that guy, and I think he sent him a gold record because he posted, okay, this was something in one of those metal magazines that kind of would always have the misleading headline.
Yeah, oh, Blabbermouth.
Yeah, and about a year ago, there was a picture of him with his, you know, with a little note attached from Ozzy. You know,
okay,
and it was all he wanted in life, man, was just some recognition or whatever. And Ozzy heard that he was dying or that he was sick, really sick. And he sent him a gold or a platinum record of Blizzard, I think.
Of Blizzard. Okay.
Yeah, or one of them. And
I'm going to have to look for that because I'd like to read that story.
I'm pretty sure it was him. I don't think it was Daisley, man. It may have been the drummer. From when,
right,
I'm, when they, I'm
and Daisley was the other guy. I mean, they've been in wicked.
Because I think this guy's been sick for a while.
Okay.
You know. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, he had cancer, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's gonna follow you around for a little bit.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out there. I know the Rock Under Fire podcast has always been associated with some big, or not, this guy might not be huge, but it's always been associated with a rock death.
We started in 2016, so 2016 was that year where everybody was dying, and kind of it stopped. Thank God. It just seemed like 15 kind of spilled into 17 and they just kept dying.
You know,
that brought us all the way up to Tom Petty.
And heavy hitters, too. It wasn't like it was just the bass player from Guns N' Roses. I mean, you know, you're talking about Prince.
Prince,
I mean?
Bowie, all that. Yeah, yeah.
You're talking about big time dudes, man.
Yeah, it wasn't right. Some unknown drummer from the Hollies or something that most people haven't heard of, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Who's Johnny Smokescreen? I don't know who that guy is.
Well, I don't know. I mean, who knows what's going to – we still got a few more months of 2020. Who knows what it's going to throw at us, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we got – Aaron, we're coming up on about an hour and 15 minutes. Before we wrap up, though, I want to ask you, where do you see the concert industry going in the net? I mean, is there any way to even speculate at this point when things will get back to somewhat normal? Do you see ticket prices going down? Do you think about this at all? I mean,
oh, absolutely. You know me, I'm an avid concert goer.
You see a lot of shows, yeah.
I go to a lot of shows, yeah. The last show I went to was end of February was my last real show. A few weeks ago, I went to see a Talking Heads cover band here in Richmond. And I actually do have a show coming up on my calendar at the end of October. I'm going to go see Marty Stewart up at Birchmere, which is up in Northern Virginia, which is an outdoor venue. You know, you remember Marty Stewart, you know, country guy. He was featured a lot in Ken Burns' country music documentary. And so I think, it's a bit of a challenge, right, with winter, kind of coming up on us, because it's hard to do the outdoor venue thing. And I'm hoping that, this whole pandemic that it kind of starts to, dissipate. We start getting vaccinations, or people are practicing, following safe practices to help eliminate it, minimize it, so that we can get back to indoor shows maybe by, after the new year, in the spring sometime. It's tough, but I mean, if we can eat in a restaurant, though, we can go into the supermarket, and I think there's an opportunity to get into a music venue.
How do you feel that at 25% capacity, though? That's like the rule.
The thing. And it's also it's a very simple finance equation, right? Just like that doesn't work for most restaurants. It's just not feasible for them to be in business to do 25% of what they're capable of. And it's just that the math doesn't work for them to be profitable that way. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just certainly hope. I mean, because not only do the venues need it, in this day and age, we know that musicians don't make money from record sales, right? They make it from merch and touring, and they need to be out there and doing that. the one thing I guess we have to look forward to is when things do open up, there's going to be a shit ton of concerts to go to.
Everybody's going to
be out
that,
on the
man.
Road.
Yeah. I got two lined up for next year already.
Well, and that's right. That's the same thing too. Like I've had tickets for shows. I've become an Orville Peck fan over the last year, and I had tickets to see him at the 9:30 Club in May, and it's been rescheduled, quote unquote, for next May. They're holding my money, and I'm hoping I'll go see him and I have another show like that too. Lily Hyatt. I was supposed to see, and that got postponed. Postponed for it to March 2021. I certainly hope that's a reality, and at least by then we can get back to that. But goddamn, that's one thing I'm really jonesing for
it's overdue.
Oh, when I'm at a concert, man, I have blinders on. I'm just experiencing the music. I'm focused on the stage. I'm not thinking about my worries or what I got to do tomorrow. I'm just, it's like a drug. It's of the moment. I'm just enjoying myself, totally, wholly, when I'm at a concert that I'm having a good time at. So, the whole virtual shows and watching something, I mean, that's kind of cool. I'm glad it keeps the artists going afloat a little bit. But for me personally, it's just like watching a YouTube video. It's just not the experience that I crave or that I feel that I need, So
you're not leaving your living room with your ears ringing. You're just not
right. Yeah.
What is the layout of a venue like the National? Or is it all seats? Is there a floor with a balcony? What is it like?
The National here in Richmond is it's a historic theater, so general admission floor, and then it has balcony seating. That's where a lot of and then we have a historic theater here called the Altria, which is all ticketed seating. And my favorite venue these days is a place called the Broadbury. Holds about 300 people, and that's just like the general admission floor where I like to go most often these days. Anyways, it's our smaller club that would bring in, that would have three bands or four bands every night. It used to be called Strange Matter. That closed a while back. So we need another one of those. So, but yeah, I'll take anything, man.
Gun to the head question really quick. What's on your turntable right now as we speak?
It is a artist called Katie Malko. She put out an album this year called Failures, kind of like a female singer-songwriter. I bought it unheard. So I bought it at Deep Groove because I just kind of caught my eye in the new bin. And because I am lucky to have that old school experience of going into a local record store and speaking with the proprietor who knows music and says, gave me some recommendations. I picked that up, and that's what I've been listening to as of today, because that was on my turntable. And then a country artist, a black country artist named Charlie Crockett, put out a record called Welcome to Hard Times. This is another very recent purchase and listen, in the last week or so.
Nice.
See, that's why I love your show, man, because you have all these artists I've never heard of and I'm always interested in, man.
Right? And that's what kind of makes radio great, right? You do want to take something from it. You do want to just get turned on, know? And that's what we try to do with our show. It might not be, the latest release, but, it might be some cool old Ultravox song you never heard of before. And, and then for when Todd and I do the show, when somebody calls and says, hey man, you just turn me on to that. I never heard that old, the old 97 song before, that track from the Buggles, or they might have a story. Like, I can't believe you just played that song. I've never heard that on the radio before. And they'll tell you some story about why it's important to them. And it's the most gratifying thing. And that's what I do miss about doing the radio show. So that's why I'm hoping to get back to it again soon, man.
Pat, I know you're playing vinyl again. What's on your turntable? What's the last thing you listen to?
Vinyl? I haven't been playing much vinyl. I went back to digital because it's easy to listen to at work.
What do you
mention that. Cause
what's the last thing you listen to?
Well, it's crazy you asked this because I was going to ask Aaron. My last question to Aaron was going to be if he had ever heard of an artist named Patrick Sweeney. And I'm listening to his record. It's his current record. Every Hour is a Dollar Gone. And
no.
I am really, really digging this. I've done a little bit of research on him because now I'm curious because the guy's really talented. and he's got some other stuff out. It's not like he's, you know, just dropped this record this year or anything like that, and he's a newcomer. But it's just, it's I'm really digging it, man. Patrick Sweeney, every hour is a dollar gone. It's,
all right, I'm going to go check it out. Is that a new, relatively new release, or?
Yeah, I'm trying to find a year on my iPhone right now without messing this up. I don't want to mess this up and like go, start playing music as I'm on my, because I'm going through my earbuds right now. 2007, this record is from. Somebody turned me on to a song from it. Nine Mile Records, 2007.
Okay.
It's got 16 songs, but it's new to me. I don't even know if this record came, you know, like I said, I don't know how many records the guy has out. I can easily search it, but yeah, he's got one. He's got a record out from 2014, 2011. That's just looking through 1999. He's been around since. Yeah, this is 07, and I'm totally
right,
digging this album, man.
All right. Well, now, I mean, I love vinyl, but you know what? Sometimes that's what Spotify's for too, you know, so I can go check it out. Give
yeah,
it a listen
I
tomorrow.
I admit it, man. I'm guilty of Spotify, man. I love Spotify. Thank God for Spotify, man, because, you know, I don't have the money to go out and spend half, you know, listen to half the shit I listen to these days, yeah. You know?
No, and then sometimes when you're driving in your car, you just absolutely have to hear, you know, Human League's album Hysteria where you're driving. You just have to hear it just then and now. And that's what, you know, that's the role Spotify plays sometimes. You know what I mean?
I listen to more music now than I ever have, man, in terms of just sampling. It's like, what does this sound like? I've never heard this album. Let me hear it now. You know, stuff I never would have gotten a chance to hear, man.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know? I'm still listening to the Allman Betts record. I really enjoy the Allman Betts record a lot. That's
I don't have
new,
any new artists, man, any new or obscure artists to add to this conversation, man, because I've been listening to Jeff Beck's Blow by Blow, which is one of my favorite albums ever.
Classic, yeah.
It's nice. Just, I mean, the greatest instrumental album ever fucking made, man, in my opinion, of course, man. But I love it, man. I can't get enough of it. I've been playing the shit out of this album since I was 14 years old.
Right.
And it just never, ever, ever fucking gets old, man. But, yeah, anyway.
This was a great conversation. I'm really happy that we finally got you on our show.
Oh, no, hey, I appreciate you guys having me join you tonight. It was, I really enjoyed myself.
I'm glad we could finally put this together, you know. It's long overdue because we've been talking about doing this since it was 2016, you know. I mean, the last time I saw you, we were at a bar and we were talking about – Oh wait!
And
no,
I wasn't able to get there. You texted me, and I was not able to get there for some reason that night to meet him. I might have been working.
No, but that was the last time I actually saw you. We were having dinner in the city, but before that was the night when we were at
the Liberty, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and we got in touch with Pat. Pat was you were working or something. You couldn't make it out, but we were talking about putting this together even back then. So that was like something like 2016.
That's true.
You know, so that's awesome that we finally got to do this, man, and kind of cover all areas of conversation.
I got to throw out the call letters for him. WDCE.
That's right. We'll be back.
I hope you are, man. Memphis, I really
Egypt,
do.
Well, we shall live again, man.
Well, thanks, guys.
We shall live again. All right, Aaron, it's been fun, and glad we could do this. We will be. We will talk to you up the road. And hopefully do it in person at some point.
That would be
all
awesome.
Sitting at the Rock Under Fire table and, you know, where we can have a few beers.
Let's make that a goal.
Speak into microphones, man. And that would
That's
be
a goal. I agree with Aaron. Make that
and,
a goal.
Yeah. And another thing, man, we expect an invite on your show when your show picks up again, man.
All right. You know what? Let's do it. Right on. I'm with that.
Shit, I'm driving to Virginia.
Yeah.
That's a 3-hour
yeah,
ride.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know if I'm driving to Virginia, man, but I'll call. I'll call in.
Shit.
Oh, if you're driving, Pat, I'm in. Road trip.
Well, you know, Mike, I've had a mutual friend of ours on the show before, so that's been on your show too.
This is true, man. This
yeah.
True. And now, did they call in, or they were actually in the studio with you?
They were. Yeah, he was in the studio with us. Dr. Marlowe, exactly right.
Dr.
Marlowe.
He
was
there.
Did our show.
All right.
He was visiting me and my family here a couple summers ago, and just happened to work over a Tuesday night, and he came on down and. Shared his, you know, the wisdom that he's known for.
Dr. Marlowe did something like
on our show.
Live.
Yeah, he was on our show live. That was I remember, way back,
episode 25, and here we are for episode 60. That's the thing, man. I don't know, like, for every one show we do, you guys do like five or six.
You know? Yeah, we got
to. It's much harder for me to keep up with your show than it is what you keep up with our show.
Yeah, we got a little shy of 500 or so on our website.
Jesus,
so yeah,
Christ, man, more power to you, man. God bless.
Very nice.
All right, Aaron, we will be. We like I said, man, we shall live again.
Rock on, guys. Thanks again.
Peace.
Thanks, brother.
Okay. See you guys.
Bye
now.
Pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me.